are just so forced into dealing with it now because of the other budget considerations that face us that we're actually going to do it this time.
The Senate Finance Committee takes a new approach to Medicaid reform. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state lawmakers hear reports of a failing prison system.
We saw where they had their computers, they had three computers that I asked, how many of these actually work? And none of them worked.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Alaska Measures of Progress, or AMP, test scores released last fall disappointed many school districts. Now State Education Commissioner Mike Hanley says he's eliminating the test for 2017 while requesting proposals for a replacement. Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer has more.
In a surprise statement late Tuesday night, Alaska Education Commissioner Mike Hanley said the Alaska Measures of Progress tests would be dropped for the 2016-2017 school year while the state considers new assessment structures. Hanley says the new federal law, the Each Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA, allows changes in annual testing procedures. He said earlier that those changes could work for Alaska.
With ESSA, which isn't in effect yet. With the ESSA, it allows us to have either a summative or a series of interim assessments that can be combined into a summative. And so if that's where we choose to go, that works for me as well.
The state had contracted with Kansas-based Achievement and Assessment Institute in 2014 to develop and administer the computer-based tests. Glitches within AAI caused long delays in delivering last year's test scores to the state. Test scores released in November showed about half of the Alaska students tested in spring of 2015 did not meet new standards for English language and math. And educators across the state complained that the scores did not indicate in which areas of the curriculum students lacked proficiency. The outcry has resonated in Juneau with one bill, HB 232, aimed at eliminating the tests entirely. Representative Jim Culver, a Palmer Republican and sponsor of the bill, is claiming victory on hearing the Education Department's announcement. Culver says elimination of the AMP test requires the Education Department to build an assessment model from the bottom up.
I think that's the most important takeaway. Whatever language we use in statute, meaningful information on an assessment, and quick results.
Culver says computer-based tests should require immediate results.
So that was one of the first red flags that went up. It was 6 to 8 months later, we finally got the data.
The legislator calls the AMPs a pretty expensive experiment at a cost of $67 per student. Culver says his bill gives voice to school districts that were concerned about the AMPs' failings. But now legislative action is not needed. He did not say he's withdrawing the bill. Hanley says that standards tests are necessary to shed light on the students who are needing help. He says he fears going back to a time when failing schools were not recognized and students that were not doing well were hidden. Hanley says the Education Department will begin work immediately to determine the assessment approach that will work best for Alaska's students while it starts the requests for proposals process. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
As lawmakers look to trim the state budget shortfall, their attention is focused on one of the biggest areas of the budget, Medicaid. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon announced today that a new Medicaid reform subcommittee will focus on the issue over the next month. The subcommittee will look at two separate bills, one proposed by Governor Bill Walker's administration and another from Fairbanks Republican Senator Pete Kelly to change how health care is delivered to low-income Alaskans. Both bills encourage the use of case management. In the state's version, a contractor assigns a primary care provider to each patient. The provider would help coordinate health care that the patient receives with an eye toward preventing problems that cause unnecessary hospital stays and emergency room visits. State Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson says patients benefit from closer attention.
What we found is they love it because, you know, maybe for the first time in their life, somebody's contacting them and saying, hey, looks like you're having some health issues. And based upon what you have been seen for, you might benefit from seeing a primary care provider who can work with a cardiologist or some other specialist. And based upon what we know about your services that you've received, we can set up an appointment for you.
Both bills also seek to reduce pharmacy spending by pointing patients toward generic prescription drugs rather than name brands. Senator Kelly is also interested in exploring privatizing some state health care services. Kelly says he's looking forward to quick and bold action.
We haven't done it well enough over many, many years. So there's no finger being pointed at the Health and Social Services Committee or this commissioner. This has been a cumulative problem that I think we are just so forced into dealing with it now because of the other budget considerations that face us that we're actually going to do it this time.
The new subcommittee will meet three times each week. Republican Senators Kelly and McKinnon, along with Peter Michicki and Kathy Geisel, will serve on the subcommittee, along with Democrat Donnie Olson. Senator McKinnon says she's interested in looking to take pieces of both the administration's bill and Kelly's bill in making a recommendation to the full Senate Finance Committee by the end of February. A commission set up by the Alaska legislature in 2014 has issued a report on Alaska's corrections and judicial systems, saying they are expensive and don't do enough to improve public safety. Commission members presented the findings and recommendations to the House Finance Committee on Monday. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Alaska Criminal Justice Commission Chair Greg Razzo told legislators Alaska is expected to run short of prison beds next year.
Alaska's prison population has grown 27% in the last decade. That's very significant growth. Our prison population grew roughly three times faster than our resident population. The state spends over $300 million on corrections each year, and hundreds of millions more every time we build a new prison.
Razzo says some of those high costs have to do with the type of people who get put into prison. Half of them, he says, have not been convicted of a crime. They're waiting to go to trial. He says that's not money well spent.
And Alaskans are not getting a good public safety return on this spending. We are not seeing return on investment. And why? Because nearly two out of every three inmates who leave Alaska's prisons return to prison or jail within 3 years.
Razzo says one reason for that high rate of recidivism is that not enough is done to help inmates re-enter society, find jobs, and live a crime-free life. For example, Razzo says when he visited the Anvil Mountain Correctional Center in Nome, which can hold 150 inmates, he asked inmates,
if you're in prison for an alcohol-related offense, would you raise your hand? And I would say that all but six people raised their hands. And then I asked, if you're in prison for a drug-related offense, raise your hands. And the other six people raised their hands. So we've got all these people in there with significant substance abuse problems, you know, committing crimes, and there's absolutely nothing that happens to them in terms of that sort of treatment.
Razzo says vocational training would also better prepare inmates for their release. He said the Anvil Mountain employees were dedicated but, quote, completely under-resourced.
We saw their library, which had about a half a dozen paperback books in it. We saw where they had their computers. They had three computers that I asked, how many of these actually work? and none of them worked. They just sat there.
And a significant number of inmates are mentally ill. That's according to Commission member Jeff Jesse, director of the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Corrections doesn't like being the largest mental health provider in the state any more than we like them being in that role.
Also, Razzo said, research has shown long prison sentences are no more effective at preventing crime than shorter stays. Representative Les Guerra, an Anchorage Democrat, had a question about that.
Is there any truth to what you hear that if you throw a low-level, nonviolent, especially young offender in jail for a longer period of time, what you do is not really make society safer in some cases, but they learn how to be better criminals by being in jail, and that makes society less safe. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, the evidence supports that. We reviewed it, and it became part of the basis for our recommendations.
Suzanne DiPietro is an attorney for the Judicial Council. She told legislators the commission's recommendations are based on extensive research on what works.
Four other states that have engaged in an exercise like this where they've adopted evidence-based ways to reduce the prison population and reinvest in treatment and other types of recidivism reduction services have seen reductions in their prison populations that disproportionately positively impact minorities.
Some of the commission's recommended changes would cut costs, such as revised pretrial practices and a stronger focus on using prison beds for serious and violent offenders. The commission recommends some of those savings go to programs to reduce recidivism, including victim services, violence prevention, reentry support, and substance abuse treatment in both urban and rural areas. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, preparing for the Yukon Quest, dog, dessert, and all.
Beaver meat's probably the equivalent of the cheesecake for them. It's really rich. They eat it no matter what. They love it. It makes them happy.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Kalifornsky Beach Road reopened to two-way traffic this morning. A 150-foot section of the northbound lane at Mile 1 near Kosilov was damaged in the magnitude 7.1 earthquake that shook south-central Alaska on Sunday morning. The lane was closed until work could be done to fix the cracks that opened up when the road split and the shoulder sides sloughed away from the rest of the pavement. The Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities had a crew out Monday morning, and DOT spokeswoman Shannon McCarthy said the workers were able to make a quick fix.
Yeah, it was. Actually, they just got in there. They, you know, cut the pavement up, brought material and filled the holes and leveled it out. Now, it'll be gravel, of course, until the summer because we can't pave in the wintertime. It would, you know, would not set. But it is open to two-way traffic.
DOT will continue to monitor the area, especially during spring breakup as the ground starts to thaw. Medical emergencies connected with synthetic cannabinoids remain stubbornly high in Anchorage, about 7% of daily calls for service to the fire department. Tomorrow morning, city officials, first responders, and social service providers are coming together for 2 days of meetings. Anchorage Police Chief Chris Tully organized a similar conference on spice a few years ago when he worked for the DEA.
So we thought it was really important to set time aside to bring all those stakeholders from the community together to have a dialogue about the current situation, evaluate what's been effective, and where we go from here.
Tully says the level of spice-related calls has gone down from crisis levels earlier this fall, but it's unclear if that's due to more law enforcement tools, educational efforts, or just colder weather. The working group meets the next 2 days, but only the first half of Thursday is open to the public. Tully says that is because attendees will be discussing open legal cases and want to protect the privacy of victims. The University of Alaska Board of Regents has endorsed UA President Jim Johnson's plan to restructure the university system as it faces continuing declines in state funding. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
UA President Jim Johnson presented the framework for the plan at a two-day work session last week. He says it will streamline and increase efficiency across the university system.
Focusing each one of our major campuses, our universities, UAS in Southeast, UAA in Anchorage, and UAF in Fairbanks, focusing them on where they're strong already, where they already have a competitive niche, where there's a great deal of excellence, where there's faculty capacity, and focusing each one of them somewhat differently to hit our state's high priority needs.
Though the details are not set in stone, a press release suggests UAF could focus on technology, engineering, and mathematics, UAA on nursing and economic and policy sciences, and UAS could take the lead in mining and marine programs. The University of Alaska offers 478 degree and certificate programs, and Johnson says the idea with the plan is to reduce the redundancies between campuses. But he says some of those redundancies will need to remain in place.
There would be more specialization, and that way we can have strength and excellence in a more diverse set of fields, actually, while at the same time making as common as possible things like our general education requirements and email systems and support systems and things like that.
Having things like a common set of general education requirements at each campus will make it easier for students to transfer between programs and campuses within the UA system. The Board of Regents unanimously approved the president's framework plan, but Regent Chair Joe Heckman says there is still a lot of work to be done.
It's going to be a while before we see an actual implementation because the devil's in the details and a lot of details have to be worked out.
There are no estimates yet on exactly how much this plan could save the university, and full implementation is still years away. The Board of Regents will take up discussion on the plan again at their meeting in Fairbanks next month. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Kotzebue Sound is changing, and beluga hunters are facing competition. Researcher Manuel Castellote at the Alaska Fishery Center placed underwater microphones in the sound. Instead of belugas, he found the source of the problem, killer whales.
Turns out that when we look at our data, what we found was mainly killer whales, so that's why the project quickly became a killer whale project.
Things have gotten so bad in Kotzebue Sound that belugas there don't sing out as much as they do elsewhere. Researchers suspect the belugas are afraid killer whales will find them and eat them.
Because they know that if they make, if they're very chatty, they're going to hear them and they might be predated. So they try to be silent.
As in so many areas of the Arctic, changes are happening more quickly than farther south. In Kotzebue Sound, the seabirds that used to eat fish have declined, while those eating plankton have increased. The American Polar Society recently recognized the work of a University of Alaska Fairbanks professor. Dr. Lawson Brigham received an honorary medal for his polar research and policy work at the Arctic Council, with the Arctic Council. Coincidentally, the Arctic Council announced Monday it would use UAF as the site for its 2017 meeting. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
In the 20th century, you might have thought the age of polar exploration was over. But recently, Dr. Lawson Brigham, UAF Distinguished Professor of Geography and Arctic Policy, was recognized in part for a 1994 7-month voyage that sailed from one pole to the other. He was captain of the Coast Guard icebreaker Polar Sea at the time, and he says it was a first for any country or service.
They were significant in that it was a U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker that reached the ends of the global ocean, not Russian nuclear icebreaker or a German whatever. It was us, and it wasn't a Navy.
Brigham's award also cites his international policy work with the Arctic Council. The Council announced Monday it will meet in UAF in 2017. The Intergovernmental Forum allows nations in the Arctic to discuss and coordinate Arctic policy. Brigham says he chaired the Arctic Marine Shipping Assessment,
which is really assessing and developing a framework for how the Arctic states together will chart a course forward to protect people and the Arctic environment.
In receiving his medal, Brigham is in a select company. Since 1936, the American Polar Society has honored only 62 individuals for their polar science and exploration endeavors. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Your friends, family, and neighbors at Raven, Alaska, connecting over 100 communities across the state. Find out more at flyraven.com.
And by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Yukon Quest mushers have surpassed a major milestone in preparation for running next month's race. As KUAC's Molly Reddig reports, tons of race food and gear were dropped off over the weekend for shipping to checkpoints along the 1,000-mile route between Fairbanks and Whitehorse.
Laura Neese decided she wanted to be a long-distance dog musher when she was 9 years old. 10 years later, after finishing high school early and earning a bachelor's degree in veterinary technology, she's about to run her first 1,000-mile sled dog race.
I'm just excited to finally be here.
The 19-year-old rookie drove from Michigan to Fairbanks last week with 14 dogs and one handler. In less than 2 weeks, Neese will join 23 other mushers on the Chena River in downtown Fairbanks for the start of the 33rd Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race. She's the youngest in the field.
My goals are to learn the trail, gain experience since it's my first 1,000-mile race, and kind of work towards future years to become competitive.
On Saturday, she dropped off a few dozen bags of race supplies at Summit Logistics. The bags contain everything she needs on the trail. Extra booties and blankets, kibble, meat, and fat for the dogs, as well as food for herself.
I brought 3 different meals to each checkpoint for myself. Pasta and sauce, and then tater tots with cheese, and Pizza Hut pizza.
She also added a local treat from her hometown.
Buckeyes, the chocolate peanut butter cookies.
On Saturday afternoon, food started pouring into the big parking lot off Van Horn. A steady stream of dog trucks and trailers pulled up, filled with white mesh bags. Volunteers descended, grabbing bags, attaching labels, and stacking them on pallets destined for remote spots of Alaska and the Yukon. Central, Eagle, Pelly Crossing.
Search. We got circle going on.
Right here.
All right, here we go.
There are 9 checkpoints in the race where mushers can reload on these supplies, but some are as far as 200 miles apart. Everything they need in between has to go in their sled.
A pair of snowshoes, an axe, fuel, a cooker, and then a certain amount of food also for the dogs, and a sleeping bag. If they need to stay put or to camp, anything that would make sure that the team and the musher would survive staying out there in the cold.
Marie Olson is a race volunteer. She's signing in the mushers and overseeing the flow of baggage. As the day goes on, the piles grow taller and taller. Fairbanks musher Cody Straith dropped off more than 3,000 pounds of gear. That's 44 bags for himself, plus another 40 for his wife, Paige Drobny. They've both run the quest before, but never in the same year. They spent the past 2 weeks cooking, cutting, bagging, and organizing food, in between training runs.
It's a little hectic. Right now, we sometimes wonder why we're doing this, but here in a week or two, it'll all become clear again, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Their friends helped them put together the menu for the trail. Straith is most excited about the little cheesecakes waiting for him along the way. There's a special dessert for the dogs, too.
Beaver meat's probably the equivalent of the cheesecake for them. It's really rich. They eat it no matter what. They love it. It makes them happy.
That's the most important part of long-distance racing, Straith says, keeping the runners happy.
Music is definitely a secret weapon. And this year we had a bunch of friends donate iPods that were all loaded up with music. And so we've got an arsenal of different good booty shaking and bluegrass and whatever else music, so we'll be able to keep the morale high by keeping yourself happy. Then if you're happy, then the dogs are happy.
Volunteers wrapped the pallets in plastic wrap and divided them up by country. Half the gear went in the back of a semi-truck headed for the border, and the rest was stored in a pair of Connexes. The mushers looked relieved as they drove off with empty trucks. In Fairbanks, I'm Molly Reddig.
Efforts to end domestic violence brought a delegation from Mongolia to Nome on Monday. The group, made up of social workers, shelter managers, police officers, and others, were there to learn how Alaska is addressing high rates of sexual assault and domestic violence. KNOM's Laura Craigle reports.
It's noon at Nome's United Methodist Church, and the Inupiaq Choir is welcoming over a dozen Mongolian delegates with a performance of Praise Ye the Lord. The music kicks off a meeting hosted by members of the Bering Sea Women's Group, the Nome Social Justice Task Force, and other community leaders. Beyond forming new friendships and sharing homemade salmon patties, the goal is to give their Mongolian counterparts an idea of how Alaska responds to domestic violence. When it comes to this issue, the two places have a lot in common. That's according to Tuv Shinjar Galgantamer, a psychologist and manager at the National Center Against Violence in Mongolia. Through a translator, she said the similarities between Alaska and Mongolia are what made the delegation eager to take this trip.
There are like some similar statistics and rates, but like the rate of domestic violence cases, like sexual assault cases, they are relatively higher in our, and also like in terms of geography, like we also have rural areas where the people are scattered in Mongolia. So all these experiences that Alaskan people have already achieved will be interesting for us.
The delegates heard all about those experiences from their first stops in Juneau and Anchorage to their final visit in Nome, where they toured the Anvil Mountain Correctional Center, Norton Sound Regional Hospital, and the District Attorney's Office before learning about specific Nome initiatives against domestic violence. Ultimately, though, the Monday lunch meeting wasn't really about statistics or hands-on training. Instead, the main message from Nome leaders was that no community can address domestic violence without getting at the cause. And for many places, including Alaska and Mongolia, that means understanding how colonization and racism have inflicted lasting trauma on Native people, and how that trauma manifests in domestic violence and other social issues that aren't easily solved. With that in mind, Gantamer said the delegation is excited to get back home and continue their work with new insight from and an ongoing relationship with their new connections in Alaska.
We have a lot planned when we go back, where we'll do advocacy towards changing the legislation.
The Mongolian delegates wrapped up the meeting with some music of their own. Performed in the Mongolian language, they said their song was about a mother's unconditional love. Reporting in Nome, I'm Laura Craigle.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer, Jacqueline Estes, Zachariah Hughes, and Josh Edge in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Jenny Nyman in Kenai, Robert Hannon and Molly Reddick in Fairbanks, and Laura Craigle in Nome. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The last day to sign up during open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace is Sunday, January 31st. Depending on your income and household size, you may qualify for savings. Be informed. Call 1-844-PLANS-AK. That's 1-844-752-6725 to find local assistance in your area. More information online at getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Primary Care Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.